You're with Stateside. I'm April Baer. There are so many things in life that have been completely upended. Going to the grocery store, a visit to the doctor's office, learning at school. It's easy to overlook how much of our recreational lives will be altered in the foreseeable future. I mean, think about anything you do that involves a crowd. Sporting events, concerts, movies, and certainly traditional theater. Here with us to look at the future of theater in Michigan is David Kiley, publisher and editor with Encore Michigan, and Krista Schaefer Eubank. She's the founder, also a director and actor with Open Book Theater in Trenton. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
David, as we get started, will you give us some examples of what theaters are doing when they can't do theater?
Sure. Some theaters are being, you know, resourceful. So the Dio Theater in Pinckney, for example, they're a dinner theater. So they have been doing something that's very charming called Kitchen Cabaret. So they have been creating videos, or the actors that have been in their shows have been creating videos in their kitchens, singing songs either from the shows that they have been in at the Dio or their favorite Broadway tunes and that kind of thing. And that's helped the Dio stay connected to their patrons and their donors. And they've been able to raise some money, you know, by having programming continue.
I love these. They're brilliant.
And the Purple Rose Theater in Chelsea, they've had actors coming on doing monologues from shows they've been in. Jeff Daniels, who founded the Purple Rose, he did a live stream as a fundraiser. And again, you know, so some of this is to raise money, but it's also to stay connected and engaged with your patrons and followers. Just because you can't put on a show in the traditional way doesn't mean that you should stop producing content, you know, for them.
Right. I think, Krista, we need to talk about just how devastating this has been on the business model that governs every single theater in America, no matter what the size. I mean, theaters need ticket sales. They need public support for the arts. And they also need relationships with season ticket holders and donors. Are we just counting out two of those three things right now out of hand?
Well, yeah, a little bit. There's, you know, we had to cancel a production, which should be, you know, running right now. And so we lost all of those ticket sales. And we do have season ticket holders who already had tickets. And a good number of those chose to donate the price of their ticket back to the theater. But that was probably, I haven't done the hard numbers, but maybe 40% or less of the tickets we sell normally for a production. So we've lost all that additional, you know, sales. We've lost sort of the fundraising we do while people are in our building. We've lost just that chance to connect with people, that chance every show brings in new audience. And so we're not building our audience in that sense. So we're trying to stay connected via, you know, email and social media and have had some success with that. But it's really just sort of a, hey, don't forget about us. Here's some fun things going on. There's so much content being put out right now that I worry that we're getting lost in the shuffle of that. And I believe that the majority of our people will be there when we come back, that they will be ready to be there. What we're not really doing is building at all right now.
Right. Theater already has a bit of a built-in challenge with COVID-19. It seems, Krista, that some of the most financially significant patrons have to stay away. I mean, if you're an older American, if you're an older Michigander, the advice is definitely to stay away from situations when you're sitting in a live theater with other people, right?
Absolutely. We had a Zoom board meeting last week, and we talked about that, you know, over half of our audience is over 60 years old. And even when things relax, how comfortable will they feel coming back to a building? And we talked about possibly requiring all of our patrons to wear a mask. We've talked about how can we configure the space and sell less tickets so that there's a little bit more social distancing. But certainly that many of our patrons would be in what is considered a high-risk group. Until there's a vaccine, there may be people who aren't willing to come back. And I don't blame them for that at all. Public health needs to be everybody's responsibility. And so we have to find a way to try to make it as easy as possible for people to come, but also understand that they may not for a while.
Yeah. David, even the most financially successful theaters always rely, at least to some extent, on the philanthropic community. Can you give us a broad view of what foundations and other big donors are doing right now? Is there anything they've been able to develop that will be helpful to Michigan's theaters?
Well, you know, the business model, it depends on the theater, but 30%, I would say, depending on the theater, between 20 and 35% of their revenue comes from ticket sales. And again, that depends on the theater. For example, a small theater in Ferndale, they get very little of their revenue from ticket sales. It's mostly from philanthropic donors and grants, because, you know, all of these are nonprofits. They all apply for grants, as well as people who take out, you know, season tickets and memberships and all that kind of thing. We're not quite at that point, I don't think, from talking to theater owners, where they're in a panic yet. They're canceling shows and seasons. The Michigan Shakespeare Festival, for example, they have announced that they've had to cancel their whole season.
The Stratford Festival across the water in Ontario as well.
Yeah, the Stratford, and also so, but there are some theaters that are making some plans. For example, the Dio that I mentioned earlier, they announced that they are planning to open their next production in June. Now, I think that they're going to go ahead, but to Krista's point earlier about reconfiguring spaces, that's a dinner theater. And the last time I spoke to the owner, they were planning, at least then, to not have the buffet, because the theater is set up in tables, you know, like cafe tables. So he's going to not do the dinner. That was his plan, so that he can set up chairs that are socially distanced, you know, apart in his space. Because it's very important for theaters just to have people coming back and to figure out the best way to do that.
David, I know you're not a doctor, but is it safe?
Listen, I think we're all following the lead of the governor as far as opening back the economy. But I also think hopefully most of us are going to continue to exercise common sense. However, when you open your business to the public, not everybody who comes to your business is exercising common sense.
As we see when we go to the stores. I mean, not everyone that you meet exactly when you go out is wearing a mask right now.
So one of the things that I'm expecting when theaters announce what they're doing, I'm expecting them to announce that we require you to wear a mask during the performance. And if you don't have one, one will be provided to you. I think I know that there are theaters trying to acquire masks. Like, you can go, and it's tough because you can go on Amazon and order a package of 50 or 100 masks, but the delivery time is like the end of June and July right now.
And it's just so surreal to me to think that theaters might be in the same position as, say, nursing homes or assisted livings, trying to source personal protective equipment right now. It's crazy.
Well, to Krista's point, you know, again, something like 75-80% of theater patrons are over 60.
Right.
So we're just going to have to do this if we want theater.
Krista, it seems without a doubt that there is a hunger for live experience and intimate experience. And I just really wonder if people of all ages aren't especially feeling that because of the physical distancing that most of Michigan has been observing. What role might theater have at a time like that?
Well, certainly I think that the strength of theater, and the thing that we always talk about at Open Book, is that it is people in a room at the same time experiencing the same thing. And so that there's real value in that, and that it only happens. It's not the same thing as a movie theater, because the actors are also there with you. And I think that people are really starting to get the importance of human connection. To speak to what we were talking about earlier about a younger audience, part of it is, I think, if you didn't grow up going to the theater, a lot of people don't think of it as a pastime, or, oh, this is what I could do on a Friday night. And so I know we, along with other theaters, are working very hard to try to attract a younger audience because we need that. I find that a big problem that we run into with people like in their 30s is that they have young children, babysitters are expensive, and then they're busy playing chauffeur Friday night. You know, they're taking their kid to a birthday party or to a sporting event or to a whatever, and their evenings are not their own. So I find that that age range, that young parent age range, is really the hardest to get.
I have a question that I wanted to pose to both of you, and I guess maybe we'll start with Krista first. Many theaters, because of the financial pressures we've been talking about, have their repertoire calculated down to the last dime, meaning to say they can stay in the black on certain kinds of shows, the things that traditional audiences truly love and connect with. The work that they might find more artistically meaningful or challenging may happen when their rainmakers have been accounted for in their season. With that in mind, what do you think that the pandemic shutdown is going to mean for the kind of work we see in years to come on Michigan stages? Krista, could you start us off?
Sure. I certainly think that there may be more, like you said, rainmakers in people's seasons, those shows that you sort of count on, you know that your audience likes, you know brings people in. One of the things I'm super proud of at Open Book is that we do different plays. We're not doing big musicals. We're not doing Neil Simon, the things that sort of a lot of theaters rely on. But we tend to do smaller, thinkier plays, and we've developed an audience and grown an audience that appreciate the kind of shows that we do. So I don't see us in particular changing that model, but I imagine there will be a lot of that where people say, well, we're not going to take a risk with this. I also think there's going to be a lot of trimming back on maybe we need to do a smaller cast show because it costs less to do that. And maybe we can't build as big of a set. As you talked about, you just sort of you figure out what can we afford in a season. And so that may be a way that people trim back as well and doing things on a smaller scale that they know that they can still do well and afford to do with this sort of loss of income we've had.
David, you have a great 10,000-foot view of what many different theaters have on their mind right now. What do you think this is going to mean in terms of programming?
I think that some theaters will dial in more of the Neil Simon type stuff, the as and revival of popular musicals for the 2021 season. But there's still so many unknowns. I haven't seen anybody move to change the shows that they were planning on doing if they're going to operate this summer. For example, the Tibbetts Theater in Coldwater, they delayed their season. They've said it's going to start in July, but they haven't changed the shows that they plan to do.
Well, I don't think they can they?
They could have. You get these licenses, but especially in COVID, the licensing companies have let theaters out.
There's some acknowledgement for acts of God, in other words.
Exactly. And then, if you wanted to, you could put on you could probably get a license to produce something that like a Jesus Christ Superstar or Cabaret or that kind of thing that seems to bring people in, every time, no matter who's doing it.
Was there a moment, David, when you realized what this was going to mean for theaters in Michigan?
It's when I started to imagine. So, the theaters I've been in, see, a lot of our listeners, they go to the Fisher and they go to the Detroit Opera House in Wharton, but a lot of them, despite my best efforts to promote, haven't been to the small neighborhood theater. And so, the Fisher and the Opera House, for example, they can get through selling fewer tickets. And plus, they have a lot of philanthropic backing. But, I started to imagine, say, the Purple Rose Theater, which I think seats around 150, something like that. And those seats are, they're very close together. And I just started to imagine they're going to have to figure out a model for a while anyway, where they can only sell maybe 40% of their tickets. And that's a big game changer. You know, a small theater in Ann Arbor, Theater Nova, they're in a really small space. They seat about 70 or 80 max, like I think it's more like 70 in their theater at one time. That model changes when you maybe are maxed out at 25 or 30 seats.
Is there any wiggle room for companies who currently have full-time employees or at least paying equity, equity rates? Is there any wiggle room for the smaller theaters?
So one of the things that we did is, you asked about wiggle room, is the show that we canceled, we kept our commitment and paid all of our artists. We're not equity. They get paid a stipend, which is not as much as I would like to pay them. And it's one of the things we've been building as we build our company. But we paid everybody. We just said, this is, they've already put in work. They've committed. People rely on this to pay their rent. We're not our sole source of income for anybody, but they need this money. And our board decided to do that. And we put that out and we let our patrons know that we did that. And fortunately, a lot of people were very supportive of that. And, when we put that news out, we saw some donations come in to help us do that. And it won't completely cover the expenses that we had. We also, and I think we were in a unique position, we actually had money in the bank. We had reserves, which a lot of small theaters, I think, don't have. And they're living very much sort of month to month.
Yeah. One of the things that, is a constant expense for some theaters, I assume for you too, Krista, is rent. And so that can be pretty steep on a monthly basis. And if you're not bringing any ticket revenue, and it starts to get dodgy after a few months. There are other theater companies like the one I run, which is the Michigan Irish Repertory. We don't have a building. We're virtual. So when we put on a production, we rent the space. So, that's a better thing. And in fact, next week we're actually doing a radio play. We were going to produce it in Ann Arbor, but when that didn't become possible, I rewrote it to be an audio play.
David Kiley is editor and publisher of Encore Michigan and a longtime contributor to Stateside. We talk to him about Theater Matters Now and Then. Krista Schaefer Eubank is the founder and a director and actor with Open Book Theater Company in Trenton. Thank you both so much for this. Such a really hard time. We appreciate your being willing to cut loose for a few minutes and talk to us.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your interest in the theater and what we're trying to do.
If you want to check out David Kiley's audio play, The Crowded Hour, you can find it at encoremichigan.com on May 8th.